The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Hey guys, Yahoo has officially released their Week 1 Daily Fantasy Football Contest. They have $1 million contest for Week 1 with no management fee and $100,000 first place winnings, meaning more money goes back to you, the players. 10 entry max, you're not going to be playing against people with 150 lineups like other sites, and Yahoo has a $100,000 guaranteed contest, so there are lots of prizes out there for week one alone. If you're just getting started with daily fantasy football, join the free-to-enter Yahoo Cup and play all season long. $150,000 in weekly and season-long prizes, and if you get a perfect lineup, you'll win $1 million. Get started now at yahoo.com/daily fantasy. Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We are live on YouTube on a Monday morning, as we always are. Sam, how you doing, buddy?
Good. Back in the studio. Not in the boss's office.
We just go back and forth.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, we're free on a Monday morning in the studio.
Yeah, so this is it's a good one today. We've got the AFC North. We're going to preview that because we're going division by division. Before we get into it, though, touch on a little preseason week two.
Yeah.
No banter today.
No
right
banter.
Into it. We got a hard out. Got a hard out at 10. We have a meeting at 10, so we got to move.
You don't even want to talk about it now that I'm officially broken?
No. Okay. Later in the week. After the MRI and the x-ray and all the different things that you need to go through.
No, I'm just strapping it up.
But you are definitely...
taping it up and moving on.
Definitely have your wrist wrapped up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basketball, the Y, turns out, is perilous.
Rough game of basketball the other day.
Yeah.
All right, preseason week two, we talked a little bit on Friday. If you guys want like a Thursday night review, we talked a little Kyler Murray, talked a little Andy Isabella.
The Russian pencil.
Dwayne Haskins, Ryan Finley. Russian pencil. Somebody said that story is a scam in our YouTube
comment. I didn't say it was a scam. It was apocryphal.
Anyway.
It's not a scam.
Anything in preseason week two?
Taysom Hill.
For you.
Taysom Hill out there making plays. Look, if you don't like Taysom Hill, or the Taysom Hill experience, as we should be calling it from now on, then, look, the game just isn't for you. That's all I'm saying.
So can I like the Taysom Hill experience and still believe that taking Drew Brees off the field for the Taysom Hill experience is silly?
Yes. Only, though, if you still cheer whilst it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, he's fun.
Intellectually, I disagree with this decision, but woohoo! That just deafened everybody,
way too
by the way.
Loud. Yeah. Way too loud. Popping everybody's ears. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Taysom Hill's fun. He can run. He's like 40 years old. He's from Matt Barkley's recruiting class.
I don't think that makes him 40.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Matt Barkley, who, by the way, the highest graded quarterback in the NFL, as I tweeted last night, you know, it's easy to get caught up, especially with the rookies. Like, hey, we just saw 20 throws from this rookie over 2 weeks, and he looks good. I mean, in any given 20 to 30 throw stretch, you could have, say, Matt Barkley look like the best quarterback in the preseason, which he has so far.
Yeah.
So Taysom Hill's been fun, mm-hmm. playing pretty well. Couple other PFF favorites looking good. Chase Winovich dominant for the New England Patriots the other night.
It's interesting comparing Winovich's and Rashawn Gary's grades right now because let's just say they fairly significantly favor Winovich so far.
Yeah, I mean,
as they did in college.
He was a more productive player in college. So far, he's been a more productive player. It's still early. The thing about Winovich, though, everybody says high motor, mm-hmm. effort. How about he just knows how to beat blocks?
Yeah, just good.
He's explosive,
right.
Beats blocks, and he's also a hustler as well.
A hustler?
A hustler. A guy who hustles.
That has negative connotations
in
my mind.
No.
A hustler?
I just remember my dad describing, you know, the hard-nosed players growing up. He'd say he's a hustler.
That accent went weird.
Boston. Hard-nosed players.
Yeah. I don't know. There was a bum note in there somewhere.
Hustler. Well, I was transitioning.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Okay.
Works hard. We talked about Deshaun Hall the other day. He's been tearing it up. You said Maurice Hurst, big game as well.
Hurst had another big game.
Yeah.
He's good.
He is.
But I like preseason, right? It's fun because typically the guys that are good in college are still good in preseason. The guys that sucked in college still suck in the preseason. Like, by and large, people don't change that much who they are. You get to see. Well, the other thing I think that's interesting is now that nobody plays any of their starters ever, is you get to have a legitimate look at all the backups. And
right.
It raises that question of, like, who has the best backup quarterback in the NFL? Who would you say?
Titans? Ryan Tannehill.
Okay, I could see that one.
Or whoever loses the QB competition, which apparently is open.
Yes. The three, I think, that have a legitimate shot at it, the Titans, whoever loses, the Chargers with Tyrod Taylor, who's been really good so far, as long as Philip Rivers sits himself on the bench and chills during preseason. And the Colts, Jacoby Brissett.
Jacoby, yep.
Who's, you know, not really going to win anything.
In that mix would be the Redskins, depending on who they...
Right, whoever doesn't win their QB competition as well.
And then Kyle Slaughter.
One of those things is not like the others, I would say.
Kyle Slaughter consistently playing well in the preseason makes me want to roster him. Throw him on the roster.
Oh, I'm fine with rostering him, but
he stays on my list.
It might be a stretch to best backup in the NFL. There might be something to be said for Matt Barkley as well, actually, to be honest.
Now, Barkley, he had two games in 2016 where he was fantastic for the Chicago Bears. He also had a ridiculous game where he had 13 dropped passes that year. And we talk a lot about Trubisky and the Bears. The Bears' play calling and offensive, their system and their playmakers in 16 and 17 were some of the worst in the NFL. And last year it became one of the best. It was a big part of, Trubisky's statistical increase.
I think there's something to be said for Matt Barkley is one of those backups who is very limited, but if you limit the offense to what he does well, he could be quite useful. So
he's been making big-time throws left and right here this preseason.
Right, but if he's the kind of player who if you give him the full playbook, the full offense, you change nothing and you need to bring him in as a backup during the regular season, it's probably not going to go well. But if you pare back the system and you ask him to do only what he does well, he could win you a couple of games.
Yeah.
It's just he's a specific type of play of backup that you can't just put him in there and not change anything because that will go badly. But if you put him in there and do change some things, he could win you a couple of games in a pinch.
That's what you want from a backup. And then real quick, Daniel Jones thought he looked good once again. He's got three really good deep balls so far this year. Two for touchdowns in the two preseason games. He missed two intermediate throws, though, the other night, and he had a bad fumble. So that did tank his grade a little bit because he's got ridiculous stats so far through two games. Had a couple, couple screens and a couple short passes that picked up yards after the catch. So the deep touch and accuracy has been fantastic. Intermediate passing has been inconsistent, almost choked again. And then he had that fumble. It was bad block by the right tackle. He saw the pressure and then tried to do too much and fumbled.
You know who got the strip sack?
Yeah, Vaughters.
James Vaughters. Yeah. That's the other thing that's cool about preseason. You're like, oh, that guy's still getting a check. Yeah. Random guy you saw once during the PFF grading.
Hey,
James Vaughters is still playing football. Nobody knows who he is, and rightly so. He's like an obscure edge rusher for Stanford that randomly graded well for a stretch.
You're wasting 20 seconds of everyone's time.
They just need to know who he is, and apparently he's still playing football.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we ready?
Got a strip sack in Daniel Jones.
AFC North preview time, unless you have anything else.
No, I'm good. I'm done.
All right, let's start alphabetically by city.
Okay.
I think it's the Baltimore Ravens.
It is.
It's the Baltimore Ravens. I think they'll be one of the more fascinating stories in the NFL this year for a couple reasons.
obviously Lamar Jackson and what they're doing offensively, it's against the grain. They're going to be, or when Lamar took over last year, they were as run heavy as any team, basically in NFL history, the way they ran the ball.
Yeah.
In the design run game. And then defensively, all offseason, we talked a lot about coverage versus pass rush. What's more important? How do you build your team? Do you do it outside in? Do you do it through the trenches? The Ravens have lost a lot in their front seven, but they look loaded in the secondary. Best secondary in the NFL, especially when Earl Thomas and everybody's healthy. So that'll be a good test case if they can manufacture some pass rush. By the way, Tim Williams rushing the passer pretty well. And a couple opportunities this preseason. So can they manufacture some pass rush have some guys emerge? And will it matter if their coverage is so good? So both sides of the ball, some real interesting stories to follow here in Baltimore.
Yeah. So let's talk Lamar, because that's the single most interesting thing about this offense, particularly because of the system they're going to wind up running, which is probably going to look a lot like the 2012 San Francisco 49ers offense that had Colin Kaepernick, the same offensive coordinator, right? Essentially the same system.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is designed around A, maximizing the rushing threat of a talented quarterback, and B, limiting what you ask that guy to do from a passing standpoint because he isn't a Tom Brady, right?
Right.
I think it's worth clearing up the notion that Lamar Jackson, where he is in the accuracy standpoint, right? Because we said right from the outset, all throughout the draft process, that there's definitely a path to success at the NFL level for Lamar Jackson. It's just not going to look like the same, like the path for any of these other quarterbacks.
Right.
If he's going to succeed and be a good NFL quarterback, it's going to be in a system that is tailored towards what he does well and minimizes what he does badly, and essentially uses one to cheat the other.
Yeah,
right?
I just did our QB rankings.
Okay.
And I wrote up exactly that. And I said, look, from in a macro view, our pre-draft analysis of Lamar Jackson was perfect last year. I think it showed exactly what he is. And then even within a game, I keep saying, no matter what you think about, it's not a like or dislike thing. Whatever you think about Lamar Jackson's skill set, if you watch a game, you're going to be right about it. So if you think, if you're like, wow, he's spectacular, he makes NFL throws, you'll probably see one or two. Oh, wow, he's a dynamic runner, we'll all see that. Oh, wow, he's inaccurate, you'll see that. So, again, the bullet point version of this is he's not a scrambler. He's a sit in the pocket, survey the field quarterback at heart. He likes to do that. He can scramble. So he likes to do NFL-type things from a progression standpoint. He will mix in some NFL throws, not at a high rate, but he's capable of doing it, which means, again, you can see him, watch him go through his progressions and hit this tight window throw. Like, it's in the bag somewhere. He's got it.
Right.
But his throw-for-throw accuracy is well below NFL standards. It was in college. It was as a rookie. So nothing changed there.
It is in preseason.
And it is in preseason. So he was our lowest in our actual ball location accuracy percentage last year, lowest in clean pocket PFF grade. And then again, his rushing ability. I saw somebody post some Peter Warwick highlights the other day.
Listening to this podcast even remembers who Peter Warwick is.
Google him. YouTube him. He reminds me of Peter Warwick, who is a dynamic wide receiver with the ball in his hands. Lamar Jackson is a legit runner, and we said the path to success is using his rushing ability in the designed run game, and opening, which opens up open throws due to the play-action game. And when you have open throws, you don't have to be pinpoint. You just have to put it on the receiver somewhere, and that's the way to get passing production with Lamar Jackson.
I think that's a really good point, that you can essentially find plays to back up whatever it is you think about him on any given game, because I think that's what happens to a lot of players that are very polarizing. My stance is X, right? So I'm going to go through a game and I'm going to find plays that back up X, and then I'm going to post them and say, see, I was right. Look, this is exactly what I've said all the way along. And yet, obviously, the truth is always the totality of all the evidence. It's not the subsect and the cherry picking. It's all of it.
Even Christian Hackenberg, ding, 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 ding. We hit it. We did our Christian Hackenberg mention.
Well done.
Even he had like 15 or 20 big-time throws his last year in college.
You had to go through a lot to find them, but they were there.
Well, I don't have to. I have PFF Ultimate, so they're
other people
away.
Did.
But other people did. I'm just saying. So even the worst of quarterbacks,
yes,
you can make a highlight reel.
Right. So if you want to go through and pull out all the gifs of Lamar Jackson's great throws, you can do it, and you can make them look really good. But the question is obviously, okay, between each one of these throws, what happened? Because that's where the bad is, right? And it's that's fine because, everybody has bad plays, but then the question is how many and what ratio is there? And ultimately, when you do all that and you get the totality of the evidence, Jackson is an inaccurate quarterback, which is also true for several other decent quarterbacks. It's not like a death knell. It's not just saying he's inaccurate, therefore he's terrible and cannot succeed. It just puts him into the same broad bucket as Carson Wentz and Cam Newton and Josh Allen probably and a couple of other quarterbacks. We're like, they're never going to be.
Wentz is more accurate than those guys, I'd say. But
I mean, can be, but he has the same problem, right? He's always likely to be on the low end of the scale in terms of overall accuracy, which just says you're never going to be Drew Brees, so you need to do some other things to offset that, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with making that point, right? Because the Ravens know it. They're doing that. They're saying, okay, we are going to make you do other things. We're going to take advantage of your rushing threat. We're going to build an offense that manufactures these plays for you and makes life easier because it opens up throws for you to make. All you need to do is to be, you know, passable on these throws, and we're good. So that's what we're going to see. We're going to see this offense that essentially is taking a completely different tack to any other system in the NFL in 2019, and I'm all here for that.
Yeah, and so also summing up Lamar Jackson, his first preseason game, or just the preseason in general, his first pass in the first preseason game, they roll him out, there's a wide open wheel route, and it picks up about 30, which is great. I think that's in part, I mean, I know they're not scheming or anything, but those are the types of things you're going to see. Because teams truly do have to play eight men in the box and, you know, worry about Lamar as a runner, he'll have more open throws. That's what happened at Louisville. He had the second highest percentage of open throws behind Baker Mayfield in the well-schemed up Oklahoma system. Then Lamar overthrows three passes, you know, two of which were negated by penalty. So it's just miss, 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 inaccuracy. And then he just throws a pass into the flat where a guy does all the work and picks up a 10-yard touchdown. So the stats looked great. But throw for throw, Lamar wasn't great. But the ultimate goal for your team is to create some level of passing production to match the rushing production that I think you're going to get from Lamar and from the supporting cast with Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, and everything, you know, that mauling offensive line in the whole system.
Right. There's
That's
like,
the ultimate goal.
It's almost two different conversations. It's like Trubisky and the Bears. It's will the offense be good with him at quarterback versus how much will he play well? Right?
Right.
So the idea last year was, you know, with him at quarterback and with Matt Nagy's scheme coming over, that offense is going to look pretty good because they're really good at scheming up those plays, you know, creating these sort of almost can't miss opportunities for a quarterback, right?
Yep.
Where in our system, you say, well, that's pretty much a can't miss opportunity for the quarterback, so he's not going to earn a strong grade. But for the offense, it's great in terms of, you know, expected points added and all that fancy stuff. It means the offense is doing extremely well. They're dominating the defense. It's just not necessarily the quarterback that's driving it. So with the Ravens, it's a similar story in that the offense may be extremely productive, but it's because it's opening up these sort of can't-miss quarterback plays. Now, there's a slight difference in that you could make the argument that Lamar is a bigger part of that because the scheme is essentially reliant on his skill set to make those opportunities, whereas in Chicago, it's far more the scheme is doing the scheme, and Trubisky just happens to be a passenger.
Absolutely. I do think he had more open throws at Louisville because of his skill set.
Yeah.
I think RG3 in 2012, people said, oh, he had easy throws, but I think you had to give, that was his rookie season when he tore it up, RG3's skill set allowed for that. So offensively, I think they're going to run the ball a lot. I think they're going to run the ball pretty well. They do have probably an almost top 10 offensive line. We had him, what, 11th or 12th, I think, maybe 10th. But Ronnie Stanley at left tackle, Orlando Brown was solid as a third-round rookie, Marshall Yanda, future Hall of Famer at right guard. So they've got some bodies there. Ultimately, though, they don't have a great group of pass catchers. But I do think, again, going back to the scheme, they've got 9 million tight ends. Nick Boyle, Mark Andrews, Hayden Hurst. They've got Trace McSorley as a backup QB, that there's talk about him being a Taysom Hill type because he was such a good runner, an improviser at Penn State. So I think it's going to be a lot of manufactured production, tight end heavy, and, you know, move those tight ends into the backfield, line them up everywhere. And then, you know, it'd be great if Marquise Brown could become that deep threat that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to run so much play action, you'd rather not just stretch the field horizontally. You want to do it vertically as well. So best case scenario is Marquise Brown emerging as that deep threat. And the rest of the guys, they're just guys. I think overall this group of pass catchers is definitely in the bottom 5 to 8 in the NFL in isolation. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So I'm excited to watch that offense this season. I think it's going to be fun, and I think it'll be successful. It's just not going to look like any other system in the NFL, and it's not going to put up Kansas City points. You know what I mean? Like, it might be a productive, successful system, but it's just not built to rack up like 50 a game.
And so they won a lot of games last year, and I think here's the thing we always come back to with this run game versus pass game thing. Are there isolated examples of teams being run the ball and play defense and having success? Yes, there absolutely are. 2017 Jags, the most recent, you know, extreme example where they did little from the quarterback position, won a ton of games, defense was great. It's just not as consistent or efficient as being a really good passing team. I mean, there's a reason why the Patriots win 10 plus games every single year. There's a reason why the best passing teams are generally sitting near the top of the standings. And every now and again, you sprinkle in a top rushing team that happens to be playing good defense. So it's just a riskier strategy, so to speak. But it's the one that Baltimore needs to employ with Lamar Jackson at QB. Now, defensively, we mentioned Terrell Suggs is out. C.J. Mosley's out. That's not a pass rush, you know, pass rusher, but, you know, Za'Darius Smith. So their two top pass rushers from last year are out. Who's getting after the quarterback? Tim Williams, Pernell McPhee, Matt Judon, Tyus Bowser, Shane Ray. I mean, they're just throwing a whole bunch of bodies at this thing. Might have one of the worst pure pass rushes in the league, but man, that secondary looks really good.
Secondary looks really good, and they've obviously got a ton of big bodies up front to sort of, you know, they've got a stack of those giant run-stuffing nose tackle types that are always dominant against the run in Baltimore. I don't know how they seem to find just a never-ending stream of those guys. So they're kind of set up, you know, to clog the middle and then just get some kind of pressure somewhere off the edge. And
they're good at scheming pressure up. We've talked about the Patriots in past years. And I think what you're seeing a lot in the NFL is creative five-man pressures. So creative five-man blitzes, essentially, where that fifth guy is either reading the running back or whatever it is. You know, they call them, you know, lurkers, creepers, different things like that. They're good at scheming up pressure. So I think that's going to end up becoming their strategy. Not a whole bunch of just pure four-man rushes where they're getting after it. But when you look at Marlon Humphrey, who we ranked as a top 10 corner going into the season, Jimmy Smith, when healthy, plays like a top 10 corner for the most part. Earl Thomas, best pure free safety in the NFL when
he's everything
healthy. Tony Jefferson, an excellent box safety. Losing what's his face?
Eric Weddle?
No, the corner.
Oh, Young. Tavon Young.
Tavon Young. What's his face?
Mm.
Tavon Young hurts, you know, because he was, you know, he could be a good, pretty good slot. You still have Brandon Carr over there. So it's just a good collection of bodies, though. They have Maurice Kennedy, too.
Yeah.
One play wonder
mm-hmm.
for our boy Bobby Slowick. So it's a good group back there.
The pass,
it's going to put things to test, I think, coverage pass rush.
Yeah, the pass rush is interesting because you've got, so Judon, I think, is one of the more interesting players because he's had sort of back-to-back decent sack numbers, but only one of those years was any kind of decent grade from us, and that was last year, where his total pressures did ramp up, but not to the point where you're thinking, oh yeah, dominant star in the making. So he's got a question mark. There's definitely potential there. And then the other one, obviously, that we think has potential, you mentioned earlier, in Tim Williams, who was this incredibly productive situational pass rusher at Alabama, came into the NFL incredibly lightweight, didn't really dominate the way we thought he would from a measurable standpoint necessarily, and you had a lot of question marks as he came into the league, hasn't really done it so far. But there's a trend, I think, of two separate things with these guys. One, these lightweight, long college edge rushers who were dominant because of speed and athleticism don't have the bulk to do the same thing at the NFL level. So there's a whole load of these guys that grade extremely well in college and can't translate that right away to the NFL. But there's also a trend of those guys slowly starting to add size. You know, it takes them a couple of years to add the bulk necessary to do it, and then they kind of start to be productive.
Shalique Calhoun?
Right. And there's a few of these guys that have started to do that. So maybe that's just a – you don't sort of say, okay, these long, lightweight, speed edge rushers, there's no hope for them. You just have to understand what the development path looks like. They're not going to hit the ground running at the NFL level. But if they have the frame to add a bit of weight and muscle and strength, we could see them start to really kick on in like years 3-4. And, you know, the second contract maybe right. is where those guys are going to dominate. So, you know, Tim Williams has been tearing it up in preseason. It is only preseason, but maybe this is the year Tim Williams emerges as, if nothing else, a situational NFL player as opposed to a situational right. college rusher.
I think Baltimore could certainly use it. So, as we mentioned, best case scenario, offense keeps humming, defense plays really good throughout the season, plays really well throughout the season, and they play this level of ball control, keep the ball away from the defense type of, or offense type of game, and they win 10 games.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals, who,
oof.
Man, this offensive line situation is hurting. This offseason, Jonah Williams, their first-round pick, gone, mm-hmm. out for the season. Clint Bowling, retired. Solid guard, top half of the league type of guard. And then Christian Westerman, a guy who hasn't seen a ton of snaps, but we kind of liked him come out of college, and when he's been on the field for the Bengals, has been one of their better interior players. He's gone. Retired.
Yeah.
So it's all falling apart.
In the last, like, since the draft, they've lost maybe 3/5 of a starting offensive line, which yeah. already wasn't great on paper.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, new scheme. You got Zach Taylor coming in. And let me start with Andy Dalton. I told you I had the QB rankings. I want to read what I wrote about Andy Dalton and see what you think.
Wow. All right. That's pretty narcissistic, no?
What do you mean?
I want to read you what I wrote?
Yeah, so I could either just explain my thoughts or I could just read it word for word
that's
and
fine.
Then have you react.
You quote you. Go for it.
I will. Quote, Steve Palazzolo, quote, there was a point in Dalton's career in which he was the poster child for the average quarterback with his 2015 season, the perfect example of a group of excellent skill position players being able to elevate him to top 10 production. However, an influx of similar talents has pushed Dalton down the list of QB rankings in recent years. So we ended up putting him at 20, right next to Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. We debated those few guys. Is that a fair assessment of Dalton and where he is at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I think he is that. He is the poster child for that the middle class of quarterback, which is, you know, if in the perfect
which
situation.
Used to be more valuable.
Yes. In the perfect situation, he can be pretty good. And he can definitely, he won't be the reason you lose games, but you need that perfect situation around him if you're to have any shot. And if you don't, you're just treading water, essentially, until you find something better. The other thing about the offensive line falling to pieces is, so right now, they've got Cordy Glenn slated to play left tackle. Cordy Glenn has had some good play at left tackle. He's also had a lot of injuries.
Yes.
He went down in camp recently just for a small stretch. But when he was down, their left tackle was John Jerry, who has been a pretty...
career guard.
And not a good one.
Yeah.
So that would be
there's also
catastrophic.
Trey Hopkins stealing some first-team reps from Billy Price, their first
yes,
round pick.
Yes, they appear to be...
center.
They appear to be almost giving up on Billy Price already.
So it's a new scheme, you know, a whole new system. Billy Price is more of a, you know, probably more of a gap run type of blocker, more of a downhill type of blocker. They're running more of that outside zone scheme, you know, the McVay Shanahan system. Look at McVay taking credit for Shanahan's system now. So it is going to be, I mean, this could be the worst offensive line in the NFL. They re-signed Bobby Hart at right tackle, who's been horrible, but
right.
he's young.
When Bobby Hart was the sort of the one weak link in your five, that wasn't great. Now Bobby Hart is the same as everybody else. And the line just looks, I mean, this could be miserable.
On the positive side, could they get a breakout from John Ross? Can you free him up in space in the system? If A.J. Green's healthy, with A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd, that's pretty nice. If Tyler Eifert's healthy. I mean, a lot of it's if these guys are healthy. But when those guys are on the field, plus a Joe Mixon who can create some mismatches out of the backfield, it's not a bad group of playmakers. It's just that health is such a major concern for all of them. And it takes John Ross really emerging in year three here.
Did you see our PFF Fantasy Twitter account posted essentially Tyler Eifert's stats when healthy? And he's like the best tight end in the NFL if you could just keep him healthy.
Yeah.
It's just, that's never going to happen. The man's made out of Chad Pennington's knees.
So I will say the defensive side of the ball, from what I saw, especially the other night against Dwayne Haskins, I mentioned this on the other podcast, I thought they did a really good job of scheming things up. They're showing a lot of that you know, stacking the line with those double A gap looks, and they're doing a good job of creating one-on-ones with their edge rushers. Jordan Willis emerging. Last year we had them, we expected them to be one of the better D lines in the NFL.
Yeah.
They had some injuries. But when Carl Lawson's out there, Carlos Dunlap, Jordan Willis, Sam Hubbard's shown some nice stuff. They've got a lot of depth on that defensive line. Of course, Geno Atkins pushing the pocket in the middle.
Their defense generally, so like last year it was bad.
It was really bad last year.
But it was way worse than we expected it to be going into the year. So as much as that was what they, that's the most recent evidence we have to go from, I think it is reasonable to expect the baseline of that group of players, talent-wise, to be a lot higher than that. And I know they didn't hire Steve Palazzolo as their defensive coordinator.
They didn't.
But I think that the change in system will benefit the talent that's on defense regardless.
My change of system would have been
a lot
more impactful.
Of course, would have maximized that talent. But any change in system, I think, should have a significant impact. So you look at kind of top to bottom, there's a lot of talent on that defense. William Jackson didn't have a good year at all last season, but the season before that, you could make a case that that's like the greatest statistical cornerback season we've ever seen. This guy went one-on-one with Antonio Brown twice
really
the season
good.
And won. That doesn't happen to most cornerbacks.
Probably got in his head.
Got in his helmet anyway. Yeah. William Jackson is still there as their number one. He could be extremely good this season. You've got Jesse Bates emerges. Linebacker is a perennial question for them, but they do at least appear to be trying to get more athletic at the position.
Yeah.
As opposed to keep trotting out Burfict and Ray Maluga and hope that, I don't know, something different happens this time. And then the defensive line, as you said, has a ton of depth. So I think the defense should be a lot better than it showed last season. And then the offense, it's just, wow, that offensive line looks like it's going to destroy everything.
Yeah, and so it's a team that a few years ago was really, really good. I mean, they had a really good top-to-bottom roster. It got depleted a little bit, you know, with guys like Marvin Jones going on, Mohamed Sanu. It seems like they'd replenished, but now this past draft, you're not going to get anything from Jonah Williams, your first-round pick. Drew Sample, pretty athletic tight end, who's more of a blocking tight end, to get him in the second round. That would be the concern here, is that a team that could really use an influx of rookies contributing there in some key spots might not get a whole lot from their first two picks. Jermaine Pratt, their third-round pick, might see some time at linebacker. As you mentioned, linebacker's been a big issue, but it's not like this draft, I think, is going to completely turn them around.
No.
The big story is going to be, I think if you're a Bengals fan, all right, new blood, no more Marvin Lewis, no more, old ways, I guess, so to speak, old system. What does the new system look like? Does Zach Taylor, bring some enthusiasm and just some new ideas that you can build upon for the future?
Yeah, and as we said, for this entire offseason, I think it's a big offseason for that system,
Right.
Zach Taylor, Sean McVay, and everybody, all the other disciples, it's a big year for that system to show it can evolve and combat NFL teams adjusting to it.
So I think it's a rebuilding year for Cincinnati. I think they're in a similar boat as the Miami Dolphins, where...
just to say screwed?
You can't. I just, even if I was GM, I don't know if I could say, hey guys, we really need to get Trevor Lawrence in 2 years, but...
Whatever about like tanking for this year...
How do you do a two-year tank?
That's tough.
Well, if you have Andy Dalton, so if you have a shot at Tua next year, who I've compared to Jimmy Garoppolo, I think that's, Mike Renner's compared to Dak Prescott. If you can get a guy like that, you're going to get him on that rookie contract. It's worth taking, and I think that's where the Bengals will probably be a year from now. I mentioned Ryan Finley the other day. Their fourth-round pick looked fantastic. But again, I don't know if he's got the skill set to really be a consistent high-end starter. He looks like one of those really good backup types that could still develop, but you're still going to be in the QB market a year from now, and it looks like this roster is going to have them picking pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is I think that they'll be in the Tua sweepstakes without having to try to tank. So
yeah, Tua, Herbert.
There's the good news.
Whoever.
You don't have to go and sell it to anybody. Hey, guys, we're going to tank for the top quarterback in this draft. We think we can get there without that. You guys go out there. You play your hardest. And I think we'll be in that discussion anyway.
So we're not optimistic about the Bengals. Let's move on to the Cleveland Browns. All right, guys, quick break to tell you about the only way that you guys can catch every out-of-market preseason game live. It's NFL Game Pass. Preseason's going. Your season can start now, though, with NFL Game Pass. You get your first look at all the rookies, all the players on new teams,
It's all the action, all the football you can handle all in one place. Obviously, I'm excited to see everybody. They gave us this whole read and these notes, but you know, they said, which player are you excited about? For me, it's pretty much everybody. I want to see the rookies. I want to see those players on the new teams, but especially those rookie quarterbacks. I want to know if Kyler's going to bounce back next week. Can Daniel Jones keep it going? NFL Game Pass is the only place to catch it all live during the preseason. And if I do miss the game, I go back, check out the replays. So whoever you want to watch during the preseason, you need NFL Game Pass to do so, especially if you're out of market. The other guys I'm keeping an eye on, those rookie defensive players, Devin Bush, Mack Wilson, Chase Winovich, can they keep it going? Because all of those guys could be instrumental in the AFC playoff picture. So make sure you catch all the action this preseason with NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. That's NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. There's an interesting balance here between high expectations for the Browns, and also I do think the difference between them and the Pittsburgh Steelers isn't that great. I don't think the Cleveland Browns are by far the favorite in the division.
It's such a weird dynamic because they're the favorites for a division they've never won.
Yeah.
They haven't won this division since it was the Central, which most of our listeners didn't know existed. Or a lot
AFC
of them, anyway.
Central podcast here.
Right. So, I mean, they haven't won the division since it was called that. And, you know, Austin Gale's out there in the office blissfully unaware that there were even Central divisions once upon a time.
It was the other Browns franchise, too.
Right,
not this Browns.
So they haven't been favorites for division since they came back into existence. When was that, 98?
99 was their first 99. Couch.
So, but I don't think it's unjustified. I think what's incredible is, this team was basically, they were hip deep into the multi-year tank job, essentially, right? This was such a complete, extensive rebuild. They stripped this thing down for parts. They loaded up on draft capital. They loaded up on cap space. Remember at one point, the Browns had like $140 million for the cap space. They had like 25 picks in drafts. This team was essentially ripping this thing apart to bare bones, stripping it down. It's like rebuilding a car, right? They had the thing stripped down to the chassis and nothing else, and they were just waiting until they got the engine. They find Baker Mayfield in the draft, and suddenly now we have a rebuild job. Now we actually have this thing ready to rock. They can put this thing together, and because they'd stripped the whole thing down, they'd sold it all off for parts, they had a fortune, a war chest they were sitting on to basically throw all the resources at this thing and immediately put a team around Baker Mayfield. That's what's most impressive about this, is they had all the resources to go, okay, we're going to make some trades happen, we're going to bring in arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL, one of the most talented receivers in the NFL. We're going to bring in a top-level pass rusher to go along with Myles Garrett. We're going to bring in Olivier Vernon. We're going to throw free agent money at a guy like Sheldon Richardson, who a lot of people don't like because, you know, he plays at like 80% all the time. But we recognize the value of the 80%.
Yeah.
So we're going to bring him in. And they just immediately have created this really good-looking roster around the quarterback that completely changed everything.
Yeah, and now Mayfield throwing to Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Rashard Higgins has emerged as the number three, even a Jalen Strong who could be a nice solid number four. We'll see what happens with Antonio Callaway when he comes back from suspension. A couple tight ends, well, you know, David Njoku in particular. So they've got some playmakers to throw to, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt coming out of the backfield. It should be an explosive offense. I'm on record saying, look, I think we already know, people know how much we like Baker.
Yeah.
As far as what we've seen from him, 3 elite years at Oklahoma, last year one of the best rookie seasons of the last 10 to 15 years or in history from a grading standpoint. So I think he could put up MVP caliber numbers.
Yeah.
I also think that they're going to be forward thinking enough that they're going to be there with Freddie Kitchens, Todd Monken. I think they're going to be the team that's just uber aggressive in the passing game.
Yeah, this offense could be genuinely scary. I think they're good enough to be able to pass really heavily. And then those running backs they have, if you give them consistent 5 and 6 man boxes, they will rattle off huge numbers when they do get the ball. Like you hand the ball off to a Nick Chubb or a Kareem Hunt against a light front because you've been scared off by all the passing, those guys are going to rack off huge chunks of yardage. Even just the scrimmage we saw against the Colts, you know, they were doing essentially two-minute drill work, and they've been pass. The Colts back off. They go with a light box. They hand the ball off to Nick Chubb, and it's an 80-yard touchdown right off the bat. I think you're going to see a lot of that. Really, the only concern on this entire offense is Greg Robinson, who so I think the ultimately is still Greg Robinson.
I think the O-line in general, though. Chris Hubbard.
The O-line is
the epitome of average, but
that's fine, right?
At best.
Yes, the O-line is like creep back toward average and Greg Robinson.
They're still ranking in the 20s, though.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where with Tyrod at quarterback, he was horrendous at protecting the O-line. He was getting crushed. Baker came in. It was a completely different deal with Baker there and Freddie Kitchens taking over the play calling. Baker just didn't get hit. So, you know, again, they're kind of, this thing looks like it's built kind of like what Seattle has done in the past, where it's like, I've got this quarterback that I think in different ways can protect the offensive line.
Yeah. Right? I think it'll look better there.
Can handle pressure.
And I think Greg Robinson will look better in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield as his quarterback than he has in the past. And we are coming off, I think, probably the best season of his career, probably not coincidentally, in the year that Baker started half the games. He's still Greg Robinson, and that's going to be a problem at some point.
I think there's going to be a point in the NFL where some teams play around with passing the ball 70% of the time. I wouldn't be surprised if the Browns are that team. You know, there are, I don't want to get into the weeds with it, but there's not a whole lot of quarterbacks through the years. Brady's one of them, where the game plan is actually go throw the ball 45, 50 times, and we want to do that, where almost literally every other team in the NFL hates doing that. They don't want to do that. They don't trust their quarterback to do it. Brady's been successful doing that. It's one of the reasons why I think he's the best, you know, because I think he's able to shoulder a workload that other quarterbacks have not been able to do. I could see the Browns putting that on Baker. Maybe not necessarily this year, but at some point in his career saying, look, you're the guy. The game plan is to throw the ball 40 to 50 times in this game. Go make quick game decisions, down the field decisions, be aggressive, make big plays for us, especially with this group of playmakers. I could absolutely see that happening.
Yeah. So I think this offense is going to be exciting. What about the defense?
So the defense, I think the big question was in the secondary. They've got solid pieces there. You know, can Greedy Williams, the second round pick, emerge as the corner opposite Denzel Ward? It's also one of those things where, you know, they're going to play a little bit more zone. And we saw Arizona last year play a little bit more zone. And even though they were bad as a team, you can kind of, your defense can creep back toward it. You can be in that middle tier with a zone heavy, less aggressive type of scheme. I think they have the pieces to do that and then complement it with Myles Garrett and the improved pass rush.
So I think that front looks spectacular.
Looks really good.
You've got Miles, just the front four of Myles Garrett, Larry Ogunjobi, Sheldon Richardson, Olivier Vernon. Then you start getting into the rotation guys. You've got Kenard Avery running off the edge. You've got Anthony Zettel is still there. You've got some really exciting players there that can legitimately rush the passer. I think the linebacker core is solid. The big question is that secondary. And the bigger question, I think, or part of it is, regardless of how well Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams end up playing as a number one, number two cornerback duo, and that's assuming Greedy is that guy.
He's got to take over Terrence Mitchell. TJ Carey's on the field, too.
The depth is concerning.
Yeah.
Because once you get beyond that, there's a lot of guys that you do not want covering wide receivers in the NFL so far.
So that's why I do think zone-heavy type of scheme, and one of those that, you know, kind of trusts the defensive front to get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
Defense has to keep things in front of them. And then, you know, I think they're like a year away from really replenishing that secondary and then potentially having a scary roster. You know, if they continue to improve that back seven. I like, you know, Kenard Avery's essentially playing linebacker in the system, even though he's a pass rusher, essentially. And Joe Schobert was a pass rusher in college, even though he's played linebacker in the NFL. I always say when you have those guys, boy, does that give you some nice flexibility up front as far as blitz packages go. I like that component as well with Olivier Vernon and Garrett and all those other guys.
Yeah, I think Schobert has shown that he's sort of become this good linebacker who can also rush the passer at times. Whereas
of
I think
Mac Wilson.
Yeah. Whereas I think Avery is more of a pass rusher than he is ever going to be a stand-up linebacker. And I think that was true in his college days as well. He's one of the few guys I've ever seen who legitimately sort of played both positions, as opposed to a guy who had two defined roles depending on the down.
Like a
Bruce Irvin or a Von Miller, where it's you're going to play stand-up linebacker on first and second down, then kick down to rush the passer on third down. Avery was legitimately sort of playing two different positions. Like some days you're going to be playing as a true off-the-ball 4-3 linebacker. Other days you're going to be like a defensive end. You're going to be rushing the passer off the edge, and it's not a down and distance thing. You're just going to play two different roles.
Right.
But I always thought he was a better edge rusher than he was a linebacker, and I think that's still going to be true.
So ultimately, what are you thinking for the Browns here? A lot of people think that they are the favorite in the division. Do you think they are the favorite here?
I think they are probably joint favorite. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that they should be the favorite of the favorites for the division. But I think there's just a note of caution there, right? There's a lot of good on this roster. The big question mark is in the secondary, and that's one of the most important places to have a question mark. Because if the secondary doesn't hold up, that's a real problem, even if your offense is good and your pass rush is good and your your run defense and running the ball is good. That's a real issue if that secondary can't hold up.
There are already rumblings that Freddie Kitchens, this guy really came out of nowhere to become a head coach. And there's already rumblings, oh, he said this, he said that. That's not what head coaches do. Do you think that's going to be a factor? You've got all this talent, and it's pulled together by a guy that's inexperienced there. And I don't want to, first-year coaches can have success. We've seen it. But is that a concern with all this collection of talent?
And it's not even just Kitchens. They are going to do this in a very unusual way from a personality standpoint. So you've got Freddie Kitchens, who is already showing a propensity to kind of do things his way, to go his own route. You've got Baker Mayfield, who that's essentially the guy's calling card, that he is not going to do this the way everybody else is.
Right.
And, if you call him out, he's going to go back at you. The guy spending half his life taking shots at Colin Cowherd and Tony Grossi. So I don't know whether that's going to be a factor or not, but you now have a head coach and a star quarterback who are both kind of plowing their own furrow and doing this in a way that most people don't. I don't know if that's going to be good or bad, but it's different.
It's going to be entertaining.
And it's unpredictable. So stuff is going to come up, whether it was the Duke Johnson stuff, right? Where they basically both threw him under the bus and ended up, now it worked out. They ended up trading him, getting back a third round pick essentially, which is a steal for a guy that's probably not featuring that heavily in your offense. But, there was that report that Mayfield's comments kind of put a few of the veteran players, their nose out of joint a little bit, and it had to be smoothed over and that kind of stuff. So stuff is going to come up, and those two guys are going to do things the way those two guys do things, and it may or may not ruffle some feathers along the way. Now, I don't know if it'll matter if they're winning, but that's definitely a variable that doesn't exist in some other franchises.
And that's part of the reason why I think Kitchens might just say, that's it. I don't care who we have at running back. We're throwing the ball 70% of the time. Let's do it. Again, it might not happen this year, but he feels like the type of coach that would embrace something like that. So either way, it's going to be incredibly entertaining.
It's worth pointing out that the forecast guys, of whom you should check out, the PFF forecast, George and Eric, their models are currently predicting the Browns to get, I think, 8.6 wins, which puts them under their 9-7 Vegas line.
Yeah.
So as much as the hype is legit, 8-9 wins, 8.6, whatever, it's good. It's not quite where everybody else thinks they're going to be.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, maybe people are sleeping on Pittsburgh because there's no Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Officially. Second year in a row, though. No Le'Veon Bell. There's no Antonio Brown. Not going to talk about Antonio here.
And the helmet.
But it comes back to the quarterback situation, right? When I'm just going back to the QB rankings again. By the way, Baker was at 10. We said, look, he's a top 10 quarterback. Big Ben was at 8, despite coming off of his worst season. This last year, 2016, his two worst seasons over, say, the last 10 years, as far as just throw for throw, despite throwing for over 5,000 yards. But when you have a top 8 to 10 quarterback in the NFL, it just gives you this baseline, no matter what's around you, that I think you're going to win X number of games. And I think that's where the Steelers are. Big Ben's going to win some games for them. He's still capable. He's got to cut down on some of the misses from last year. It was his highest percentage of negatively graded throws in a while, in just a long while. So, but he still had he was number two in big-time throws, you know, as far as overall big-time throws go, number five in percentage. So he can still go and win games for you. They still have a pretty good offensive line. And the Steelers have been pretty good at developing wide receivers. Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be paired with James Washington, Deontay Johnson maybe. Who's going to emerge there? I think they'll find enough weapons to replace Antonio Brown to a point.
Yeah, I think people are overdoing the impact of what's happened to this team, right? We've already seen that losing Le'Veon Bell essentially doesn't do anything to them.
Yeah.
He's a great, talented player, is, you know, one of the most spectacular playmakers in the NFL. They didn't have him last year. They plugged in James Conner, Jalen Samuels. It didn't make any difference whatsoever. The offense was still dominant. Why? Because the offensive line stayed intact. And the offensive line is still intact. And it's still one of the best units in the NFL. And if they are blocking the way they've blocked for the past few years, any old stooge in the backfield will get production. So losing Le'Veon Bell doesn't make a difference. Losing Antonio Brown makes a big difference. But as you said, A, the quarterback is still there, and that's the most important thing to a passing game. B, the offensive line is still there, so the platform for that passing game to have success should still be intact. C, Juju Smith-Schuster is a very good number two who has looked like he has the ability to step up and be a number one, and then you have those young guys. And I think
Dante Moncrief.
Yeah. Let's assume that Dante Moncrief remains Dante Moncrief. But the two guys that I think are very worth mentioning are second-year player James Washington and rookie Deontay Johnson, who collectively so far this preseason have caught 11 passes for, 208 yards and two touchdowns. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. James Washington has started to look like the James Washington we saw at Oklahoma State. Deontay Johnson already looks like the Deontay Johnson we saw at Toledo, which is to say, ridiculously polished, ridiculously sophisticated in what he does. His technique, his craft is incredible. You know, we were talking to, I did a video with our colleague now, Solomon Wilcox. Solly's a big fan of the hype of Dante Moncrief, right? I was trying to convince him that that happens every offseason and that really the two guys to focus on are James Washington and Deontay Johnson. But he was making the point that, you know, one of the things that you see a lot from wide receivers, you don't sort of understand is the mental part of the game and the adjustment from the college level to the NFL level in terms of, you know, sight adjusting routes and understanding how to read coverages and what that means and yada, 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 right? And it's why even if the guy is athletically spectacular, sometimes you see these guys just get paralyzed by the weight of what they have to process and a given down, right?
Right.
And you remember that play last year where it was a really nice pass to James Washington and he just kind of like seized up at the end of the play and it was ugly, right? That kind of play he made in his sleep at Oklahoma State, but suddenly he's thinking about everything he's got to do and look like he didn't know how to catch a ball anymore. Now you're starting to see the James Washington that doesn't have to think about what he's doing and he's back to being a playmaker. Deontay Johnson, I think, has he doesn't have to worry about that because I think he understands all that stuff anyway already. So I think you're going to see a much more seamless transition from him because he's already so polished at all the stuff that he needs to do to be able to do that. So I think between those two, you're going to end up with a viable number two and a really good sort of slot third weapon that they've got. And as you say, this team has been ridiculously good at replacing wide receivers down the years.
Yeah.
You know, the guy moves on, they plug in the next one that they've drafted, and
Mike Wallace,
if anything, becomes better
Sanders
than the last guy.
Yeah, they've had good receivers through the years. So I think, again, the pass game wasn't as efficient as 5,000 yards that Roethlisberger threw for last year would indicate, but I think they're more than capable of winning games through the pass game. So that's good on that side of the ball. But like the last 7 or 8 years for the Steelers, the question is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. It's kind of the opposite of what the Steelers used to be, where you knew they were going to have an excellent pass rush, a good blitz scheme, and they could cover pretty well on the back end. Every time we say that their pass rush isn't good, people remind us that they've had a ton of sacks. But we're talking about, can you, with your front four, can you just beat blocks and put pressure on the quarterback? They're pretty good in that department with guys like Cam Hayward. TJ Watt has emerged off the edge. But, you know, Bud Dupree has not been great, despite whatever he gets for sacks. They don't have the type of pass rush that they once had when Woodley, James Harrison were coming off the edge every single year, and they had some good blitzers in the middle. But I think there is as much pressure on Devin Bush as any rookie in the NFL, because it's tough to rely on rookies. And this is one of those, again, they traded up 10 spots to completely shore up a weakness in the middle of the defense. You know, they have not been very athletic in the middle. They need to cover in the middle, and they drafted Devin Bush to replace Ryan Shazier.
Yeah.
And Shazier, if you remember, was athletic, but not that great in coverage pretty much until his last season and a half right before the injury. So it took him some time to kind of translate athleticism into viable coverage ability. Bush might be able to do it right away, but it's a lot of pressure on him to fill this immediate need that Pittsburgh has.
And the Steelers, I think, ask more of their linebackers than pretty much any other team in the NFL. You know, you saw for years, whether it was Shazier, whether it was who's the guy in the middle before Shazier that had like a couple of really good seasons, then went off to Miami. Why is this?
Oh, Timmons.
There you go. Lawrence Timmons. Lawrence Timmons was asked to do some of the most absurd assignments you've ever seen from a linebacker.
I was going James Farrier.
Right. I was going way back.
Yeah.
In terms of dropping and picking up deep crossers against the Tampa 2, some crazy stuff they were asking him to do. And that's part of the reason why his grade a lot of the times dropped off when he was kind of still in his prime, because they stress those guys a lot in terms of what they expect from those linebackers. So not only are you expecting this guy to hit the ground running and, be a reason that this defense is propped up, but you're going to ask him to do things that other rookie linebackers are not asked to do. And a lot of those things are not easy in the slightest. So yeah, it's a baptism by fire for Devin Bush, but I think he's got the skill set to be able to do it.
Yeah. And again, they're solid up front with Cam Hayward, Javon Hargrave, Stephon Tuitt. I just don't know how much that matters, that they've got just solid across the board. I think their pass rush is important, and then the secondary is probably most important, or the back seven in general. They've been a zone heavy team for years now. They've played around with trying to play a little bit more man coverage. I don't know if that's the plan this year with Joe Hayden's been solid, mm-hmm. being over there. Steven Nelson was attacked as much as any corner last year, held his own given the assignments, being on an island quite a bit in man coverage and being attacked down the field. Mike Hilton's one of the better nickel corners in the league. And then you have two safeties who were just athletic but not great football players, and Sean Davis and Terrell Edmonds. Both guys were solid last year. But, again, I think, it's a lot to ask of those guys. So I just think there's still so many question marks in this secondary.
There are, but I think the Steelers are another, much like the offense, that I think a lot is being made of, the loss of a couple of players. The defense has a pretty extensive history of sort of playing better than they should based on the talent within it. So this idea of, you've got PFF grades and we grade every player individually, and then the totality of that grade sort of gives you an indication of what a defense or what a scheme on either side of the ball should be producing. Then you have the actual production. And right. The difference between those two is bridged by the coaching and
like
the system.
Statistical
right.
output type of thing.
And that typically favors the Steelers. So we grade those players and you think they shouldn't be getting the level of production they are on defense based off the talent that's there. And which means that the gap is essentially what they're doing schematically. And they've got a consistent history of being able to put that out there and actually playing better than the sum of their talent.
The thing about Pittsburgh, though, it's kind of the opposite of what we said about the Chiefs for a few years. I know the Chiefs were so bad defensively, that's what's recent in everyone's mind, but the Chiefs had 4 or 5 years where they would play just an aggressive brand of man coverage, and they would make some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL look bad. Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, didn't matter. They had really good games against good quarterbacks. The Steelers always felt like the opposite, where they're the epitome of what George and Eric keep saying from an analytics standpoint, and say, look, the offense determines how good the defense is going to be. So when the Steelers played against a bad quarterback, they make them look bad, and they look pretty good. But once they went up against a Brady or a Breeze or a good quarterback or an Aaron Rodgers, they get torched. Now, last year they did finally have a good game against Tom Brady, but overall, I think this has been kind of the story for the Steelers. It's kind of this, like, they every year, oh, is this the year? Are they emerging? Are they a good defense? Well, no, they just went on a run of playing not so great quarterbacks right. for 6 or 7 years.
I mean, yeah, good scheme can only take you so far. At some point, the talent needs to hold up against other yeah. players, and that's usually where they get found out. It's, you know, over the top.
So, again, I think the big takeaway here is the Browns are getting all the hype. The Steelers somehow are flying under the radar. They're probably comparable teams, all yeah. things equal, because they both have top 10 quarterbacks. We expect the Steelers to have playmakers emerge, and the defenses ultimately are probably close. They're probably yeah. similar, just doing it in a different style. So you think the Steelers are right there with the Browns?
Joint favorites.
And then the Ravens are the wild card. Can they yeah. can they do this, you know, unorthodox style and sneak a few extra wins in there, and then mm-hmm. you know, they'll be in the mix. It should be a competitive AFC Central.
Unless you're Cincinnati. North.
Cincinnati tank for somebody.
Yeah, hometown Bengals. They're going to suck. Sorry.
It's all right. Well, come visit us if you guys, you know, if you're in town for some Bengals games, come say hello.
Mm.
Unless we don't want you here.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. All right, guys, that'll do it. That's our AFC North preview. We'll hit up the rest of the divisions. How many more are we going to do this week? Do you want to do two more?
We can't promise anything. How do we time-wise? No, we still got time.
One more. One more this week?
Yeah.
Maybe a bonus.
Maybe.
Tease it.
Okay.
All right, everybody get to PFF.com. Go get your PFF Elite. It's PFF Elite season. You need it for your fantasy drafts and just essentially maintenance throughout the year.
Maintenance.
Yeah. Maintenance.
Okay.
All right, guys. See you later in the week. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and of course your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.